Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Anthony Horn. I'm here to introduce loads and loads of our best clips from this week's Red Men Plus content. Just want to give you guys a heads up, like I do each and every week on this show. All these clips you're about to hear are from our full Red Men Plus shows. If you want to get them, even in video or indeed podcast form, simply head on over to redmenplus.com. If you sign up as a yearly club captain, that would usually cost you £50 for the entire year. However, if you use the code weekly, W-E-E-K-L-Y, on the sign-up payment page, we'll give you 50% off. There you go. So you'll have it for £25 for the year, which is an absolute bargain, absolute bargain, just for you wonderful, wonderful weekly listeners. So yeah, check it out. Hopefully you enjoy it. And like I say, let's crack on then, introducing the clips. What a monumental win Liverpool had last weekend. Yes, I know we're nearly at the Bournemouth game, but still, when are we not going to stop reminiscing about Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0? Let me say that again. Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0. It was an absolute pleasure to host the Final Word show this week. I had Abby Rudkin in, I had Sam Walker in, and we had a big old chat about how good Mo Salah was in that game and him breaking Liverpool's Premier League goal-scoring record. So yeah, check this out. It's time then to let's coronate the king again. Easy to take for granted how really special Mohamed Salah is. He goes past Robbie Fowler's record, 129 Premier League goals now for Liverpool, more than any other player in this competition's history. He's a freak. He just is. He's absolutely freak. I'll start with you then. Two more goals, two instinctive goals. Like, we've seen Mo Salah score loads, you know, cut inside and bend them in. We've seen him score, you know, penalties. He can do. He can run one on one like he always does. Alisson kicks or whatever and slide them in. But these two are just balls that bounce to him. And first time, both of them are rocketed past David De Gea. He was, I think he was our best player yesterday overall. All three of them scored two goals, all the strikers. But Salah's entire game was incredible. He couldn't get near him. The only time they got near him was to foul him. And they took it in turns of fouling him. And he didn't bother him. He just got back up and he played. Martinez elbows him in the face. Probably could have got red carded. Just gets up, keeps playing. And then, before we even talk about his goals, like, the best way to get back at somebody who's tried to elbow him in the face is to literally spin them like a spinning top. Make him fall over and set a goal up. And then go and get yourself two more. Like, he was incredible. Like, I don't know if he has to, like, I might be wrong, because I'm a Liverpool fan, so I'm biased, of course. Like, he's an all-time Premier League great. He's a great player. He's one of the best players in the world. He's having this down season. Oh, what's happened to Mo Salah? You give him the contract, and he's gone to shit and all this. But, like, he was phenomenal. He was the best player on the pitch by mile. I thought he was unbelievable. Again,
I feel like he won't get the plaudits he deserves until after he leaves, though, when people look back at what he's done. Like, you speak to people now, and they're still like, oh, I still think Suarez was better for us and all that. But you look at the records that Mo's done, it's unbelievable. Like, you need to give credit where it's due. We won't see much better than Mo Salah ever again. Like, I honestly think Mo might be probably my best player that's ever played for us, apart from Stevie now. Like, he's worked his way up there. All the amazing moments Mo Salah has given us over the years, and he's still going to keep doing it. He even tweeted himself, like, made up to make history with the club, like, wanting to make more. He wants to carry on with this club, and I know we give him the money that he wanted, and now he deserves it. Because I think a few shows I've done with you, I've been like, oh my god, we've given him all that money, and he just showed yesterday he is so worth absolutely every penny, and he's just absolutely brilliant. I wouldn't swap him for anyone. And out of the original from three, if I was going to keep any of them, it would have been Mo, and I'm glad he's still with us now. And he's evolving with Gakpo and Nunes. He's going to be a part of that for hopefully a long, long time.
It's interesting in his sound because like he's a winger, effectively, but he's a forward.
Yeah.
But he's got the mentality of a striker. You could tell he knew that goal was the record. He knew. Took his top. Like, he doesn't, yeah. You don't just.
Take, I didn't.
Yeah, no, I never really. I had an idea it was coming.
I was terrified when that VAR, with the VAR thing, yeah, I was yeah. thinking, oh, don't tell, do it to him when he's
stuck. He's took his top off. Because he can't do it again if he scores anything. No. Himself sent off. But he knew. He's got that mentality. All goal scorers have it. You know, he said to himself, he said, since the day I signed, that was my aim. Like, I wanted this. Like, I knew what I could do. He's now, just for clarity, 205 Premier League games for Liverpool, 129 goals in those league games, added to 53 assists as well. So look at that. So it's 129 at 53. My quick maths tells me that's 182 goal yeah. involvements. I think I'm right in saying in 205 games. It's absolutely ridiculous. In all comps,
no one matches 200, that.
291 games all comps, 178 goals and 69 yeah. assists. Like, he is the king, he is ridiculous. And his record against Manchester, that's 12 goals. There's another record, 12 times now he scored against Manchester United. Nobody's even come close to doing that for Liverpool. He's a special, special player. I think we've all been a little bit critical of him. Again, the whole team's, we've been critical of everyone. It's like, well, you got the money, mate. You're the one who needs to drag us through yeah. it. And yesterday, he more than stood up. He was sensational. He arrived in 2017. He's been a sensation
ever since.
He's, yeah. been, he's just the levels of that man and the consistency to do it over, what is it now? This is six seasons at Liverpool. Six seasons consistently scoring 44 goals, 27 goals, 23 goals, 31, 31, and he's already on 22 now in crazy. A down year. Mm. He is just, he's a freak.
Yeah, and do you know what? Forwards need their mates with them to create chances, to create space, to work on rhythm and patterns and momentum. It's the hardest position to play on the pitch, scoring goals, because you're the difference maker, but you've got to get there and you've got to, you know, the other end makes a big sort of whole team. Everything evolves around you up front scoring the goals, but that base has got to start from not shipping them like we have. So it's been a down year, but it's not necessarily Mo's fault. And, you know, we've all been critical, to be honest, of Mo in certain games like Palace. You know, where was Mo? But it's difficult when the whole team's not performing to its best. Mm. You know, I'll just to sort of reminisce a little bit, there was periods of time where I thought Mane was that guy who was going to stay till he was 34. But once again, we slate Liverpool Football Club, and they're right again. They've killed it. You know, the Gakpo move, and we knew Bobby was going, superb work. Mo Salah, giving him the contract and not back and maybe Mane, superb work, because he's proven once again. I actually thought, and it's amazing that it's worked out, that it was the game that breaks the record. I actually thought it was his best performance ever for Liverpool yesterday. And when I say that, it's because he's played against Man City, he's played really well, he's played against Madrid, and you know, we've never beat them, but he's played okay. He's played against Barcelona, he didn't play that game, the famous 4-0. All these big games, Bayern Munich, okay. But against the top side, he's been full of moments. Man City, where he does that amazing moment, but he wasn't amazing for 90 minutes. Yesterday, Luke Shaw, who's had his decent games against Salah before, couldn't get near him. Martinez, Varane, to the triangle that they've got with Casemiro, they haven't been beaten, apparently, I don't know. But yeah, he couldn't get near them. Every time he got the ball, he was too strong for anyone on the pitch. His touch was unbelievable. He was working in small spaces. The amount of oohs and ahs we'd done when he just turned and twisted. His passing, his delivery, two goals, two assists. I genuinely believe I can't think of a better Mohamed Salah performance in Liverpool shirt than yesterday. And it's just beautiful that it fits in with when he breaks the record. And I just think it sums him up. He never, ever gives up. And, and from what I'm told from within the club, he takes more care of his body than anyone they've ever seen.
You can tell that by when he gets his top off. Mate. Jesus
oh
Christ.
God.
Gets me legs
honestly,
going.
Honestly, I had a little moment there where I was like, fuck, nice. When he gets his top off,
he's got new muscles, hasn't he, all the time?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Every time he's like growing muscles in places that didn't even know existed. And he's like, he's had more yellow cards for taking his top off against Man United at Anfield than Man United have scored goals at Anfield. Like,
that's mad.
Since he arrived. And I've got this, if Aaron can bring it up on the screen, for those who are watching, you'll be able to see it. But for those who are listening, it's basically, go to my Twitter account, that's the all. And you'll see, like, this is Lissandro Martinez, who's the butcher, who's having one of the best centre-half seasons of all time. You know, I saw people were apologising for doubting him at the start of the season. He's literally looking the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good player, and again, he is fake. Salah's just sent him, he's put him in knots. He hasn't got a clue. And that's the other thing, Abby, that sometimes it's underappreciated from Mo Salah. We all saw the goals. They speak for themselves. The goal rate speaks for himself. He's brilliant at everything. Like, his dribbling is fantastic. That lad is a good defender. Like, and it's funny because he's been made a show of there, but that just shows how good Mo Salah is, because Martinez has been really good for them. He's been a driving force. He was a World Cup winner. He's been a reason why Man United have got themselves back into some sort of semblance of what Man United should be. He's made a show of him. And then not only that, he falls over, and I don't even know how he sees Cody Gakpo, because I didn't even know he was there. He just appears. I was like, how's he seen that? Yeah. And he does it time and time again. He's just like, the levels that he reached yesterday, and with Sam, like, it's up there with one of the best Liverpool performances I've ever seen from anybody. And to do it against Man United at home, and Man United do it again, come in full of beans, and they've got this, you know, we've got Varane, we've got Casemiro, and we've got Luke Shaw, and we've got fucking the Butcher. Well, the Butcher got fucking meat, didn't he? Like, it was got made a show of, basically.
Got carved up.
He did, didn't he? Got absolutely sliced and salt-bathed. Like, it was absolutely crazy. Just absolutely
salt-bathed.
Yeah, absolutely rinsed. And that's how good Mo Salah is.
No, he did. Mo was absolutely all over the place. Literally unbelievable. I'm still laughing at that salt-bathed.
Hey, someone needs to meme that up. Someone needs to meme Salah doing that.
Oh, my God. No, but I honestly think you're right, that probably was one of Mo's best performances, if not the best. I mean, he's probably scored even better goals for us, but overall performances altogether, he was absolutely all over the place. Oh my God, that photo is so funny though. Did you see someone edited like a Doctor Strange circle where he's like running away, and it had like Old Trafford through it where he's trying to get away from Mo? He literally had me wetting myself. It was hilarious.
The content's been great.
Yeah. No, it has. Literally, the memes have been absolutely unbelievable. And even Mo said to himself, like, on the Twitter account, like, what a good night for Liverpool fans. Like, he absolutely knows how we all felt. We were all absolutely ecstatic, and when he whipped his shirt off, absolutely, oh, I was just made up for him, you know. He deserves that record. Like, I love Fowler, but the stuff Mo's done for us over the last 6 years, he absolutely deserves that record, and he's probably going to absolutely smash it even further. It's just going to carry on. He's just going to keep going, isn't he?
Can I just add to that celebration is one of the things.
Hello, Paul.
Mr. Machen. Can I just add to that? You should have seen Trent. When Salah got that goal, he was absolutely amazed.
He got the crown on his head.
But he's like, nobody was like, yes, he was screaming like he just won the lottery. For one of us, he wins the lottery every week when he gets paid. But like Trent was like over the moon, and Elliot and Salah, the hugs that they did, because obviously they kind of mentors, but the way the team were so happy
for each other,
the way Trent was made up for Salah to go above Fowler, and the way Elliot was like, it just shows how important Salah is too, not just on the pitch, but
Elliot
off the pitch.
Was it Elliot?
You know what I mean? I was busy.
It's understandable. I've got the record here, by the way, Liverpool's Premier League goal scorer. So Mohamed Salah sits top of it, of course, now on 129, ahead of Robbie Fowler, Steven Gerrard, Michael Owen. They're the only other ones who got over 100. Fowler, just for the clarity, Salah's done it in way less.
Sadio and Bobby in there, though, that's nice.
They're close, yeah. I mean, Bobby's going to have the season of his life to get it.
Mo's just going to keep going up and up and up. We'll never, if someone, I don't even think anyone will ever break what Mo's going
to
do.
That fella
there's
right.
Yeah, Darwin and Cody, maybe.
I'll take it now if you're offering
In terms of all comps, by the way, Mohamed Salah now sits seventh in Liverpool's all-time leading scorers, so he's only 5 goals behind Robbie Fowler. And Robbie Fowler played 369 games. Mo Salah's only played 291. Steven Gerrard is next, 186, again 700 games. Billy Liddle on 228, Gordon Hodgson on 241, Roger Hunt on 285, and then right at the top is Ian Rush on 346. I mean, Mo's probably not going to score 100.
He's going to struggle to make it.
I think 70 goals.
70 goals in the next two and a bit seasons.
And that's if he doesn't stay a bit longer.
And he could stay longer as well, yeah. There's a chance he could go at least above Billy Liddle and maybe into the top three. And the games, like Ian Rush's record, he plays 660 games. And Mo Salah's just not going to do that. He's not going to be here long enough. But if you look at just in terms of the games, to be in that top 10, everybody else in the top 10 the closest was Michael Owen, who got 158 in 6 more games.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. To be seventh, and I've played less than 300 games, Sam, he is just like, he's like, I saw Adam Rowe, a friend of the show, comedian, say, like, he could be the best ever Liverpool player. If he wins another league or maybe another Champions League, there's conversations to be had of the Dalglishes and the Gerrards, because they're probably everyone's top two. Like, if you made a Liverpool Mount Rushmore, everyone would have Dalglish and Gerrard on it. Of course they would. But like, we're not that far away from Salah putting himself right in that mix. And we've had some amazing players over the years, don't get me wrong. Won everything, won trophies and trophies and trophies. Like Salah's, that's where he is now. That's where he's got himself to.
Yeah, and let's be honest, like, it's the platform around him and the landscape, isn't it? It's what we're up against. I mean, as great as Gerrard Dalglish were, Gerrard did come across Man U and Chelsea, but I think realistically, world football's on a different sort of level altogether now in terms of speed, power, pace, health and wealth within the game. So it's more difficult to remain at that level. You see it all the time. You see, look at Rashford. It's taken him 6-7 years as a pro to reach any level of consistency. And you know, Salah proved that since the minute he walked through the door. Like, people say Mane was the linchpin for us, and to an extent he was. But Salah was the one who came in and took us from just qualifying to Europe to a Champions League final with 44 goals. So there's an argument to say Salah's the one that actually elevated our level to another one that we never expected to happen. And he's kept it up since. For me, it's not just his goals, it's the assists. It's a bit like Messi. People compare Messi and Ronaldo on goals. They don't even look at the assists. When you compare Salah to one of the other great forwards, it's the assists. What made Suarez great for us as well, it's the fact of how many goals he's involved in, not just he scored. Yesterday, he scores as many as he makes.
So that's massively important. I can bring it up as well, joking that yeah. with the assists. So he's currently eighth, 69 assists in 291 games. Roberto Firmino's ahead of him, actually, on 72. Wow. Kevin Keegan's on 72, but he played over 300 games. Ian Rush, 83, but he played 660 games. Steve McManaman, 85, 300 games. Like, again, the Kings at the top, King Kenny on 515 games. Mo Salah, there's a chance, like you say, mate, he could easily be above John Barnes into third.
Yeah.
And again, the game is, it is just like, the numbers are...
Well, he won last year. I was really annoyed when he didn't get put in that FIFA Pro 11 because you got De Bruyne in there. He's a great player, we know it, but look at the... Salah won the goals and assists award the Premier League last year, and he would have been high up there in Europe as well because he made the final. Like, the disrespect from certain quarters of the world is ridiculous because he's not as big a name because he's a family man who, like he said yesterday, I'm going to go home, see me family, celebrate, have a cup of Camarante, go to bed. But because he's like that, and because he's not, like, I don't know, there's just something different about Salah where he's not appreciated the same way as your De Bruyne's are and your Haaland's. You know, the Shaun and Haaland in there who scored all the goals for Dortmund, but what has he really done compared to Salah? Salah was part of a historic season last season. One golden boot and assists and just gets ignored out of FIFA Pro 11. It's bizarre. I don't understand it. It should be there.
And you know, he is it, because when he came like eighth in the Ballon d'Or, that's and he just laughed it off like fucking, yeah, whatever. And, he's the king, and like Trent Alexander-Arnold crowned him, if Aaron can bring that up. Look at that. That is the picture. That is Trent putting the crown on the king, Mohamed Salah. Again, go and shout out to Twitter channel if you're listening to this as a podcast. But yeah,
disappointed you haven't put a crown in there, you know.
That wasn't me, that was the actual picture.
No, we need to nick that and put a crown on it and get it on our
Someone's
socials.
Actually asked me somewhere. To paint it, and I'm going to put the crown in, I think.
Yeah, when
you paint that?
Yeah.
That's right. You should do as well.
I'm going to put the crown in, I think, and you need
so,
to.
He is the king.
Tag me and Steve, though, please. No, this is a joint venture.
Yeah, yeah. 20%. Right then, yeah. He is the king. He is Mohamed Salah, he is the king. Bask in the glory of him. He is the best, the best, the best. All hail King Mohamed Salah. I think that is fair for us all to say. Right, moving on then, it's time for the Biased Football Podcast. Paul, Steve Plunk, Dan Club and myself had a big old chat with everyone else. What's going on at the top of the Premier League, in the race for Europe and, of course, in the relegation zone as well. One of the clubs, obviously, in that chase for Champions League football are Newcastle United. They're having a little bit of a wobble as of late, and we had a big old chat about what's going on up at St James's Park.
Do we think, I'll start with you, Steve, this is the end of Newcastle's, the beginning of the end of Newcastle's top four challenge?
Yeah, I do. I think they're more likely to finish sixth than fourth at the minute. And which they just haven't got the squad. No. They've had an hard season. I always say, mate, that the Carabao Cup's fucking boss if you win it, but if you get to those semis and don't get through, or you get to that final and you've lost it, it's a real big drain. Those extra three games in a busy winter period, they don't have to take the toll, and we've seen already they've had a couple of injury knocks, they've had a couple of suspensions. They've got a really good, I think their first 11 is really, really strong. I think they're lacking a striker, I think they're lacking a goal scorer, but very good goalie, decent centre half, good fullbacks, they're sorted. But then it when they start creaking. And, you know, well, Bruno's out. Well, who's playing midfield now? It's like, oh, I don't know. Well, like, you know, he's going to knock to Almiron. Almiron's purple patch was always a purple patch. He was never as shite as people said he was. Mm-hmm. And he was never fucking Ballon d'Or, whatever. You know, the form that he was in. He's found his level now, which is a pretty all right, decent footy player. So, this Newcastle gets to a cup final and finish sixth. They'll bite your hand off for that at the start of the season. The progress is there. This is kind of how it's meant to go. And then they'll spend more money, and then they'll look to fill those weaknesses. But I agree. I think Liverpool and Tottenham will finish fourth and fifth in some order. Hopefully, it's us above them. But what I would say, this isn't like knocking Newcastle. They've had a great season. They were probably just overperforming a little bit, and now they're underperforming. It's a bit like reverting back to the mean. But as a launch point for a team with literal unlimited wealth. As long as, you know, if they can get around the rules that are in place, which everyone seems to be able to do,
yeah.
You know, it'll be the Saudi Arabia, St. James's Park for like £1 billion next summer or something. They can go out and then they can go and buy that striker and they can buy the depth. And before you know it, you buy yourself a £60 million winger and then Almiron's your bench. Or I say Maximum's your bench, and then all of a sudden you're going, we've got good options there at the minute. You're looking at their squad and you're thinking, there isn't much there beyond what they've got. I disagree. I actually think Callum Wilson is prolific, but he can't be on pitch long enough. He's never fit enough, and he doesn't trust it enough. So I think if you said to Callum Wilson, he's going to play 38 games,
I
think he'd be in around 15 to 20 goals already. I think he's
good. Got 7 and 18. Yeah. 18 appearances, 15 starts. Yeah. So he's borderline 1-2.
Which, I mean, that's a 20-goal season striker. That can help you get top four. But Isaac, he started well against us, didn't he? But he's the same. He's been injured and he's having an off time. So, yeah, I think Europa League footy next season, they'll have to deal with. I think they're going to be in that. I think they're going to have to deal with that as well, the pressures that will bring for them. But this is what it's like, mate. It's not, you know, all the money in the world, but you don't just go there to there. Even City had to go a little bit. Chelsea... Remember the Chelsea under Abramovich? They scraped off four, then they go and get all the money, and then they go bang. Like, that's what it feels like Newcastle are doing. They're actually setting themselves from a good starting position to go at it. But with all due respect to Newcastle, and with their players getting getting the City team, or getting the Liverpool team, or getting the Spurs team, getting the United, very few really, you'd say.
Yeah,
not many of them.
They are
a little bit, but it's all backed down by the fact that the money's there. We know it's there, and we know what's going to come down the line. But their team is like a decent Europa level league team, really.
What do you reckon, Steve? Do you reckon this is it now, the inevitable tailing on?
Since the World Cup was going to be different for everybody, and since the World Cup, their form's not been great. I think they've won two out of the last six or seven, maybe more. And Steve's point about squad depth, and you shouldn't sort of speak disparagingly of players because they're footballers, but Almiron goes missing for a month and they've got to rely on Matt Ritchie. That isn't a guy who's going to get you into the top four. All due respect to him, he's a professional footballer. Who am I to even suggest that?
Oh, no, it's fine. You can be disrespectful. Fuck him. And Jacob Murphy as well.
But you know, and then
good analyst, Ryan Fraser, Andy Gordon.
Shit footballer here.
Fraser, who's training with the under-21s at the moment because they don't think he's got a future. But you look at the Liverpool game, Guimaraes was suspended. You can't afford a 3-match suspension to a guy who's that good in a squad of that nature. And then they bring a young lad in called Anderson from the youth setup who they think a lot of. But those aren't the guys that get you into the top four. So I think to say it today is probably done a month ago for me.
Yeah, I think it is done. And like Steve kind of alludes to, I think if they were to finish sixth or even seventh, you'd probably have to say, you know what, that's about right. That's kind of what you expected from the start of the season. You've reached a cup final. Unfortunately, went on the wrong side of that. But yeah, if you finish seventh, that's kind of as your development goes. That might be even ahead of time. Might be a little bit ahead of your development there because they were a relegation threatened sort of this time last year. And Eddie Howe's come in, transformed them. Fair play. They didn't spend loads of money. They've actually spent really wisely, but I think it does boil down to that lack of squad depth. Steve mentions Elliot Anderson there. He was on loan at Bristol Rovers last year. You don't go from being on loan at Bristol Rovers to coming in, replacing a player as important as Bruno Guimaraes and sort of carrying on where you left off. It's just not how it works. So I think if they can sort of spend smartly again this summer, Newcastle won't go away. Look, they might be here to stay in and around the sort of top 6-7 as long as they can avoid getting sanctioned by the rules, because I think they're about to fall foul again, aren't they, this week? I won't go too deep into it, but basically the guy who was supposed to be the chairman has wrote himself down as the president of Saudi Arabia in an American court somewhere, and it's all a bit messy again. So yeah,
they'll get away with it, it's fine. But they've got a good manager. I think he's a good manager, but There's a thing with Eddie Howe teams sometimes is that like you can find them out a bit as well. They really like Newcastle are where they are, and everyone thinks of Eddie Howe now as this like progressive attacking manager. Newcastle are where they are because they never let goals in.
Yeah,
they were never prolific going forwards, but they had, you know, it was a zero. It was the opposition had a zero in front of their score a lot. Now that's creaking a little bit. And they haven't got the goal scorer. That's with us. I think I believe in what Eddie Howe, and a lot of people do. But this is the first time now he's going to have to. You know, he's been at Bournemouth. He's been spending pennies, you know, relatively speaking, in the Premier League. I know he got up through the divisions by Bournemouth.
Money, yeah.
Bournemouth invested a lot to get into the Premier League. I understand that, but once they got here, it was a different ball game. He's now got to figure out how do you have a squad. Yeah. That's hard. Like having a squad's hard.
Well, Jürgen Klopp's had to figure that out. The thing for me, on I say the jury's out on Eddie Howe because the whole enterprise is just about vibe and momentum at the moment, I think. And I think they have been smart so far in their recruitment because they could have gone in January and done something mad.
Well, they did.
Andy Gordon. But I mean, like you're meant to. Like,
mad as in good mad as opposed to.
Yeah. Both ways a bit, you know, like you're meant to go and buy Damien Duff and Adrian Mutu, or you're meant to go and buy Rubinho, aren't you? You know, you're meant to go nuts when you've got all that money, because why not? But they're obviously in it for the long haul, so they're doing it smart. Eddie Howe's not. But by the time they are eventually where. Because if they are managed the same way that City have been, there's no reason why they won't win the Premier League in the next decade. But there's no way Eddie Howe's going to be in charge.
He's like the Mark Hughes. Mark Hughes or Claudio Ranieri when he's that's what I'm saying. I think he's a top 10 manager. But at some point they will outgrow him.
They will outgrow him because they'll do that. And that's what they're doing with the squad. Look at those players. I keep talking. We have this obsession with Dan Byrne. But like, because I saw him on a Saturday Social clip once, and he stuck with me because he's huge. But he's playing left back for them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry, but he's not going to be playing left back for them when they decide that they want to spend on a left back. That's just not going to be happening. And then you look through that team, and that's what I got up on FB Ref, like in terms of starts this season. There's only 11 players who started more than 10 games for them. You know, there's a bunch of players who've made more than 10 appearances. It goes down to about, you know, I think Guimaraes is like the 12th most, made the 12th most appearances for them this season. And Alan St. Maximum's injuries will have played a part in that and what have you. But there's 11 players, and I'll name them for you. Almiron, Kieran Trippier, Nick Pope, Dan Byrne, Fabian Schär, Joe Linton, Sven Botman, Sean Longstaff, Joe Willock, Bruno Guimaraes, and Callum Wilson. And then you look at that and go, how many of them in 3 years' time are going to be anywhere near this Newcastle side?
Probably one.
And it's two. The ones that are at the one, there'll be one or two stars who were so good that they ride it out. So you might find that Joe Linton and Almiron are there, but they are the Adam Lallanas of the squad by that point. You know, they're dutiful servants. They're good enough to play on odd games, but they're not first team players. If Botman continues the progression, he will be, because he's 23 and he's obviously the future of their centre-back. Guimaraes, if he doesn't get poached by someone bigger in the short term, they'll build the team around him. And the goalkeeper, potentially, but I think they'll reach a ceiling with him as well. Potentially,
I think he stays goalkeeper.
I think he will.
Real Madrid are batting their eyelashes at Guimaraes, aren't they? So
yeah. Nick Pope, then I panicked there for a second. But like, Kieran Trippier is 32. He's a stopgap short term solution. They're not going to be able to need him. They're going to have him there when they need someone of that level of experience. Joe Willock, who knows, still young enough to really, you know, to explode, but I don't see that he will. And then after that, you're hoping that, St. Maximin, proper cult hero, but he's fucking rubbish, you know. Like, everyone goes mad about St. Maximin because he's dribbly and he beats people all the time.
He's good up until a point, isn't he? He's good up until like you need him to do something sort of tangible.
We call that Adama Traore syndrome.
He's a brilliant footy. He's brilliant, like the skills and that, and the pace is frightening. And he can shoot and stuff. Yeah. But trying to find a system where he plays, and I don't think he's good enough where you build a team around him. No. And when Wolves had Traore for that one time and he started doing everything around him, and he really shone. I'm not sure. I like St. Maximin, and he mates. He's all about fucking
vibes.
He has the vibes footy player. But you can't. What do you do with him? Like, where do you play him? He can't play on the wing because you don't know what he's going to do. He's unpredictable. He's not running back the other way. Really, he'll get to a point where they bin him off for someone who's just more like consistently solid. And you'd rather than going 9, 9, 9, missing, 9 out of 10 missing, you can just go right. And he's one who's just an 8, 7 every single week and go bang, bang, bang.
This is the thing, they're in cult hero territory right now, where it's all positivity and their fans are all on board. And when you get the Geordies behind you, my word, that place is unbelievable. Mm. And they're great, you know, they're fantastic, got something going for them. But this is the thing, you're right, when the steam runs out on that, what you need is a really well-rounded squad. You need lots more good players all around the place.
and they haven't, you know, that's where it'll start to come undone. You can't just have one really good centre half, and you can't just have one really, really good midfielder. And, you know, they need to find that goal scorer who's going to play every week and score the 20 odd goals.
With regards to the manager, he's going to be the next kind of Brendan Rodgers, in as much that he's going to reach a point where he can't give Newcastle what they need. Yeah. He's not going to ask his players to text Willian to come and sign for them. I don't think we're at that level, but players will be looking at it going, Eddie Howe's trying to sign me. What do we know about Eddie Howe? Because he'll have a limit he can get to. That's probably going to happen within the next 12 months for Newcastle. We'll have to look at it and go, we need a proper world-class manager to come in and take this project on. He's done brilliant turning them from what they were last season to what they are this season. But there are levels to this, and I think he's got a ceiling which stops Newcastle going forward in the way that they would like.
I think Graham Potter might have a very similar ceiling, by the way. And I think they sort of jumped the gun, obviously changing the club there. And I think Newcastle, for what they needed at the time, he was the perfect appointment, and he's given them that. And I think he might sort of get them to that sixth or seventh, but I think anything beyond that is a real stretch.
I think he's a good manager, I really do. I like what he does.
Can he handle that? So we're talking about signing those elite players, though.
We don't know, that's what I'm saying, but we're about to find out.
Because these are, they've come here, obviously,
they're not here to make money, because they don't fucking need to make money.
Yeah.
It's a sports washing project, and the only way you sports wash is by winning. You have to win, otherwise you're not sports washing. You're just owning the
you're
team.
Just
if you just well, you're not even washing. You're just playing, you're just playing the sports without winning. So they're here to win. It's so Eddie Howe will be given a chance.
Yeah,
but he has to. Mark Hughes was given a chance, and they found out. See you
the
later.
Thing is,
and before
he's
you know it, here's Roberto Mancini. You know what I mean? Because there's someone who we know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think he's a good manager. But you're right, like. If he gets on the phone to, like, I don't know, he's on the phone to DiBala or something, like, you know, when he was leaving to get, like, who the fuck's Eddie Howe?
Yeah,
you know, like, at some point, the manager.
Sounds very exotic, either, does it?
At some point, that's what's coming. He's got to earn that. That's hard. Like, but the only he's that's on him. And time will tell if he can do
it. Big fan of a room of Steve's, Dan's, and Paul's criticising the exoticness of Eddie.
I'm not trying to sign the latest edition from fucking Serie A.
They're very much so. But yeah, there's a ceiling to a lot of this stuff, and he might well break through that glass ceiling. And British managers tend.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Not to.
Right then, let's crack on. It's Journo Insight time. Back in the studio this week, we had Neil Jones. He's feeling a lot better. I didn't have to quarantine away from him on Zoom like I had to last week. So yeah, he was right next to me in the studio, and yeah, we had loads and loads of fascinating stuff, really. Neil's, again, Journo Insight called it for a reason. We spoke a little bit about Bobby Firmino, Luis Diaz, Jota, Pitaluga, John Henry, the Champions League final fiasco, and a lot more. So yeah, check out this clip from Journo Insight.
There's been a bit about Jota this week, but this hasn't been reported. By the way, there's been numerous people talking about Jota and maybe he could be sold and stuff. I don't think that was ever really likely to be anything, if truth be told. But like, I saw Paul Gorse report, like, you know, he said, like, there's probably no intention immediately to replace him, you know, because as it stands, they've got six forwards, as and when they're all fit. Roberto Firmino's going to leave. That leaves them with five, what you're so senior players. And then you mention your Carvalho, maybe.
Bendo,
Kate Gordon, whoever it is. Like, there's enough to do anyway in the summer. Like, the Jota thing, I think we can knock on the head. Like, that's going to be nonsense.
Yeah, really, we'll start with that, yeah. If you like. I mean, I think it would be, I would be amazed if Liverpool were looking to do anything with Diogo Jota. He's had a season that's been a write-off so far, hasn't he, pretty much? You know, what, a handful of games he's played, maybe 10 this season. He hasn't been at his best for a year, really, for various reasons. One of them, obviously, was he wasn't starting games, really, was he? He was being left out because because Diaz had signed and made such a big impact. So Mane was moved into that central role and Jota was sort of in and out of the side. Then obviously he got the injury in the summer. Took a while to get back into the side or get back available, and then picked up another injury. So you can't really sort of go into this position of Diogo Jota's in decline or Diogo Jota's sort of, you know, no longer the player he was. We don't know that. And the evidence, actually, I think, of since he's come back is that that's not true. You know, I think he might need a goal and he might need a couple of goals, but I think you can see straight away Diogo Jota's sort of impact that he can have on Liverpool. He makes them a very threatening side, and a far more threatening side than they've been for much of this season. So he's still got a massive role. He signed a new contract last summer. He was signed as one of these players that plays in two or three different positions, so sort of by definition really sort of loses chances but gains chances because he's being plugged in somewhere on the left or somewhere on the right or in behind when they play with four or down the middle. I don't think Liverpool want to lose that. I'm not sure personally how highly rated he is away from Liverpool. I don't think he's a Sadio Mane or a Mo Salah where Europe's giants look at them and say, well, wow, what a player. I think people might need to look a bit closer to see Diogo Jota, you know, if you're watching him. So I don't see sort of Paris Saint-Germain's and Barcelona's queuing up and saying, oh yeah, he's the one we want, so we'll give you whatever you want for him. So I don't see much of a world really where he leaves at this stage. You know, you look at his age, 20, 26, I think. Still got plenty to offer Liverpool. So no, I think we can get carried away a little bit. And I'm like actually writing a piece for tomorrow for Goal, where, you know, this idea that, oh, we've seen Liverpool's new front line emerge. Where does Luis Diaz go then? You know, sort of which one's playing down the middle? Is it Nunes or Gakpo? Or, you know, we make this conclusion based on the last game we saw, don't we? And we say, well, that's it. That's Liverpool's front three. So where does Jota fit in? Well, we've seen many, many times this season. You know, 12 months ago, Jota was in the front three, wasn't he? Jota was the centre forward. Things can change very quickly with injuries, with form, with just sort of tactical tweaks and nuances. So there's going to be plenty for Diogo Jota to prove at Liverpool and plenty of opportunities to do it. So I think he's very much part of the future. Could be wrong, but I don't see it. And I think he's got that little bit different about him that other players maybe don't, in terms of, you know, scoring sort of headers in and around the box and being that kind of poacher, if you like. I know he hasn't done it much in the last sort of 10-12 months, but we saw him at his best. You know, he was that penalty box player, wasn't he, that can open the score in so many games, you know, get the first goal. And I think that's priceless for a team like Liverpool.
Yeah, so I 100% agree, by the way. I think the five that we've got, unless something mad happens, you're right. It's what you choose to do with that sixth one, I suppose. Like I say, we've mentioned loads, and we're going to speak about it later on as well. There's still whatever happens at the end of the season, there's still work to be done in the summer and there's money to be spent. I'm going to speak about what John Henry's comments as well a bit later on. But in general, it does feel like this is one where, you know, they did it when they let they let Origi go and they let Minamino go and they were like, you know, we've got enough anyway. And Sadio goes and they didn't really, you know, and then it was Nunes, so it was one for one. But it feels to me like that it probably could be one where they just stick with the five maybe and they go, listen, if you want Jude Bellingham and you want X, Y, and Z centre half, or you want these midfielders, we can't do everything all at once.
Yeah.
It feels like they could go. This is where signing someone like a Fabio Carvalho last summer makes sense, because he's had like a year and a bit now where he'll get right. You know, he should be in the position to take that sixth forward role, you would think.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly that. And you've got, you know, you've got Ben Doak, who's played in the Premier League, you know, shown a pretty good hand in what he's done. You've got Kay Gordon, we still need to see him come back from his injury, but someone, he's played in the Premier League, so you've got teenage forwards there that are of the potential to be pretty good players. And you know, you're looking around, really. I mean, look at the rivals, you know, how many carry sort of six first team level forwards, you know, not many. Even City don't really do it, do they? You know, City have got Haaland and Alvarez, then they have, you know, Mahrez, and then they're plugging in sort of players you can play two or three positions, aren't they? Bernardo Silva or you know, Foden or De Bruyne. You know, Liverpool have got five players who are, you know, if you take, well, it's four players, if you take Salah out as being the star of the show, the four really behind it, you could throw a net over them in terms of who, you could put them in any order really, like who's the best, who's the second best. Not many clubs have that luxury. I don't know if they'd sort of take on another sort of senior sign, and I think it'd be more likely to be sort of, you know, what can Carvalho do? I mean, look, he's not had that many opportunities, has he? And I have to say, I think he's probably underwhelmed a little bit in terms of what he has provided when he's played, just physically more than anything. You've still got, obviously, a Curtis Jones, a Harvey Elliott who can move into the forward line, you know, either side. So there are sort of good enough options, I think, for a sixth forward. I certainly wouldn't expect Liverpool to be going out sort of targeting another Gakpo or another Nunes or another Jota, another Diaz. I think you'd be looking at them sort of working on a project, you know, maybe moving Doak in, more into the first team picture, or moving, you know, Carvalho and saying, look, no, you're gonna have to learn to play number nine, or you're gonna have to become a right sided player, you know, those kind of things. So I can't see Liverpool sort of being massively in for forwards this summer. It wouldn't make an awful lot of sense with it in terms of, you know, what they've done in January, what they've done last summer, what they've done the previous January. They've been buying these forwards for this moment, really, to sort of step up and be ready when, you know, the old guard are moving on.
It's funny, isn't it, mate? Because I bet a couple of years ago, you'd have said, of the front three, who's going to be the last one standing? Mm. Not many would have picked Mohamed Salah. I don't think. I always felt the general consensus was if anyone was going to go and have that big, you mentioned before, the big money move, yeah, it might be Mo Salah. But in fact, no, he is going to be the last one standing now. Bobby's going, Mane's already gone. And it's Mo Salah's job to almost be the transition between, you mentioned before, like the two eras, with Mo Salah very firmly in the middle, still has the best player and on the most money and the star man of the whole thing. But I think you might have got good odds on that a couple of seasons ago, perhaps.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I mean, especially when they won everything, didn't they? And, you know, you sort of thought... He felt like the one out of the three who had that ambition for the storyline of their career to go and, I want to do this, and then I want to do that, and I want to do this, and I want to go and play here. And, you know, he's been pretty well paid to hang on, hasn't he? But I think it does reflect well on him, you know, the fact that his standards really haven't dropped, have they? You know, I know he's had some tough times and, you know, got a few bad months, and people talk about a bad season, they'll do 22 goals. But he does seem to sort of, it doesn't take long, does it, before he strikes up a relationship with these new players that come in. You know, you've seen him with Harvey Elliott, you've seen him with Nunes, you've seen him with Luis Diaz, with Jota, now with Gakpo. I mean, there were great signs at the weekend of that, or the last few weeks, really, of that development. So it does feel like a little bit, I suppose he's almost like the new Steven Gerrard a little bit, isn't he, in the sense of you hear players talking and saying when they signed, sort of Gerrard, if he was having you, you knew quite quickly, you know, he'd start firing the ball into you, or he'd start looking for you. And we saw Gerrard, didn't we, you know, when players like Torres and Suarez signed, that he gravitated towards them, and it was like, right, yeah, come on, I want to play with these type of guys. I think you're seeing good signs from Salah in that regards, that he's having these players that Liverpool have brought on to play with him. So, yeah, it bodes well. Although, you know, we shouldn't forget the struggles of this season and the fact that, you know, it can get to the stage where we're looking at it saying, do you want to finish 7th or 10th? We should sort of take the positives without believing that, you know, everything's going to be rosy. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Cheers very much to Neil there. And like I say, glad that he's on the mend and we can get things up and running again. Finally then, it's time for a clip from the opposition preview show. Mentioned earlier on, didn't I, that Liverpool are indeed playing against Bournemouth this weekend. Steve Plunk spoke to Ahmed Shubal. He is a journalist. He covers Bournemouth for The Athletic. He's also written for The Times for Copper 90. He's been on Sky Sports. He's been everywhere, really, as Ahmed. And yet, Steve had a big old chat about what Liverpool can expect down at Bournemouth this weekend.
The game's coming up the weekend. First things, how do you feel about that? I haven't seen what Liverpool did to Manchester United last weekend.
I can sympathise with Manchester United fans having witnessed a 9-0 earlier in the season in person. Seven is granted two goals shy, but I think the pain is still the same in terms of the level of pain there as well. But no, I mean, I remember Liverpool not being in the greatest of form when Bournemouth met them earlier in the season in August. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you hadn't won a league game up to that point.
Correct.
There was that really rocky showing against Fulham. Where you guys struggled, and Bournemouth fans are starting to think, hold on a minute, maybe we can get a piece as well. Because at that point, Fulham were not pushing for Europe. They were another promoted side like us, so we were sort of seeing a situation where we could get something. It could be another giant killing. Bournemouth have done a few of those over their Premier League existence, but it wasn't to be. And now we have we're on the other end of the spectrum now, where we've just seen Liverpool put seven past a resurgent Manchester United. And maybe it could be an inverse of that. Maybe Liverpool won't be as strong as we saw them last week. We don't really know what to expect, to be honest.
Yeah, that result, much like the Bournemouth result, the Manchester United result's an anomaly. It's not something you would expect. They're kind of freak, bizarre results, much in the same way Aston Villa 7, Liverpool 2 was. And on the same day, I think United lost heavily, didn't they, as well? Yeah, those results do happen from time to time. I don't expect the same thing to happen at the weekend. So just touching on Bournemouth, obviously, off the back of the 9-0, Scott Parker came out and committed Harry Carey in terms of his comments to the press, basically put his hands up and said, shoot me now, I'm finished. There was no coming back from that. Gary O'Neill was given the job a few weeks later till the end of the season. How do you think things have gone for Gary O'Neill? How do the Bournemouth fans feel about the job he's done?
Yeah, I think it's quite divided, but I think it's definitely weighted more towards Bournemouth fans being unhappy with Gary O'Neill, particularly in the appointment. It kind of came out of nowhere. The briefing at the time was that the club were looking at external candidates, namely Marcelo Bielsa. And that didn't come to pass. So then it got to a point during the World Cup break where Bournemouth were heading out to Dubai. They needed, a fresh face, a new manager to, I guess, instill his ideologies onto the players. And in the end, they kind of just went with Gary O'Neill. And Gary O'Neill is obviously, he showed himself to be a very astute manager at times during his interim spell. It would come back wins against Nottingham Forest and against Leicester. And he really steadied the ship. You know, you go from conceding 9 goals at Anfield, players' confidence is rock bottom, as you mentioned Scott Parker's comments, saying the players were under-equipped, you know, in public. Not the first time he'd done that either. So, you know, Gary O'Neill had a hell of a job on his hands, and he handed Bournemouth a life raft, really. And he was, I guess, awarded with the permanent job. But since then, it hasn't gone to plan. I think Bournemouth went, I think it's 4 games after the World Cup break without a goal. And, you know, they were in such poor form, and they were beginning to slide down the table. I think now Bournemouth find themselves at the bottom of the league for the first time this season, which obviously I think will catch most people by surprise. But yeah, as I say, things are quite divided, especially after that last minute heartbreak at the Emirates on the weekend. I mean, I think that was the third time this season Bournemouth have given up a 2-goal lead to lose a game. And that's the most that any side has managed in a single Premier League season. So some fans think that's acceptable, like even if you're away to the league leaders. But others are more optimistic and say that performance, the fact that they went 2 goals in front at the Emirates against Arsenal, not many sides have done that. But the fact that they did that and the overall performance gives them, you know, hope that they have what it takes to survive, especially when you consider there's like, I think there's 6 points separating 20th and 12th place in the table right now. And Bournemouth still have a few of those teams to play. So it should go right down to the wire.
Yeah, it looks like anyone from 12th down is including Crystal Palace, and not really safe from the dreaded term relegation battle. It can take a couple of results. You know, Southampton are picking up results infrequently, but they are picking up results. Everton eked out a draw against Nottingham Forest away, which is a good result because Forest have unbeaten there since September, if memory serves me correctly. So, you know, that the face of it isn't enough for them in the relegation battle, but isn't a bad result in the grand scheme of things. I don't know whether you agree, it will come down to, of those seven, who are the three worst teams between now and the end of the season? And where do you see Bournemouth picking up points against the likes of who?
I'm seeing those teams around them, so Leeds, Everton, West Ham. I think Bournemouth, considering how, I mean, they've got this mammoth sort of weird run where they had Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool in back-to-back weeks at the beginning of the season and then again now. And parts of those performances against those big teams, as I mentioned earlier, they do give a little bit of hope that Bournemouth can get points off of those around them. But we know football doesn't always work like that. Those teams in and around Bournemouth towards the bottom of the league are not going to be as sort of expansive. They're going to sit deep. And they're going to be quite a lot of, like, if Bournemouth are going to get anything, they're going to have to be ugly, smash-and-grab performances. As we saw at Wolves, that wasn't, I think, the only goal of the game came off Marcus Tavernier's dive, you know, and it wasn't a sort of a glamorous passing move. It was kind of just one of those situations where Bournemouth has to get a goal and just get out of there. So there have been flashes of some real quality. I think the January signings in particular have been key to Bournemouth kind of turning things around. We're seeing Hamed Traore, who's a young sort of central midfielder, an attacking midfielder, who's really injected some creativity into the side. Dango Ouattara, who plays on the right, a very sort of dynamic, both-footed winger, can go inside and outside. They're sort of now beginning to gel with Dominic Solanke and Philip Billing. So we're starting to see Bournemouth kind of in their final form now, and those signings are starting to gel. And I think the Bournemouth's defence leaves a lot to be desired, but what they didn't have at the beginning of the season under Scott Parker and under Gary Ono's interim spell was that firepower up front. And now that they've got that, the players starting to gel, I think that could be the key in getting them. If it is, you know, if they are to survive the season, they will be key for sure.
Interesting you mentioned Dominic Solanke, and we'll spend a moment talking about Dominic Solanke. Obviously, Liverpool player once upon a time, sold to you guys, probably fair to say, has threatened to fulfil his potential on a number of occasions and never really gone the full distance. What are the thoughts of the Bournemouth fans on Dominic Solanke, and has he started to show what everybody hoped he would be?
It's an interesting one with Solanke, because when you score 29 goals in the Championship, people expect you to come up to the Premier League and start scoring instantly, like we've seen from Ivan Toney. We've seen from Mitrovic this season as well, even though he's kind of tapered off a little bit recently. But with Solanke, I'm beginning to resign, that kind of sounds bad, but I guess I'm beginning to accept the idea that he's not a ruthless number nine. He's not an out-and-out poacher. He's not a goal scorer. He has that in his locker, but he is someone who I think would be best described as a 9.5, halfway between a number 10 and a number nine. There were times last season under Scott Parker where he basically played as a number nine with Jamal Lowe playing ahead of him as a central striker, and he did really, really well. I'm thinking of the 3-0 win at Coventry last season, where he did that to a T. And he's showing at times this season he's able to drop deep on the half turn, but he's also got that physicality of someone like Keith Moore, for example, who can be a focal point. His hold-up play is really good. But I get the sense that Gary O'Neill wants to get that goal-scoring prowess out of him a bit more. But yeah, when you look at his numbers, this is, I think it's four goals, and it may even be four assists as well. Not numbers that have set the world alight, but when you look at his overall performance, I think it'd be a bit, you'd be a bit remiss to only look at his numbers and judge him off that, as most people do with modern strikers. He just provides so much to the team. His ability to run at the channels. He's almost turned into a more of a provider this season for Bournemouth than a goal scorer. And I think that's probably caught a lot of people off guard and caused them to sort of mischaracterize him as someone who's not reached his potential. I think a lot of people expected the world of him when he came through at Chelsea, as most people do. But I'd say that he's still got a long way to go in terms of reaching that full potential. But I wouldn't say that he's been disappointing or anything like that. I think he's still Bournemouth's best striker. I think he's been one of their best players this season. And also, when he doesn't play, there have been spells this season where he's been injured. Bournemouth look completely lost without him. So I think he's absolutely imperative to the team. And I think he can only get better, really.
Cheers to Steve and cheers to Anna for that one. And cheers to you guys for listening to the entire episode of Redmen Weekly. Hope you've enjoyed it. Like I say, all those shows are available in full, either in video or in podcast form. You can get it in your native podcasting apps as well. If you want to sign up to redmenplus.com, use that code weekly. If you sign up as a yearly club captain, you'll get it for 50% off. If you are a Spotify user and you want to sign up directly through Spotify for Redmen Plus, you can do that as well. You can go through them. If you just search for Redmen Plus Podcasts on the Spotify app, you can search for us there. Now, you have to pay Spotify directly, and then they give you access to the content. So we can't offer you any discounts or anything. So if you want it for a bit of a bargain, your best way is to go to redmenplus.com. But if you love Spotify, you only want to use Spotify, and you're desperate to give Spotify a little bit more of your hard-earned cash, then feel free. Search for Redmen Plus Podcasts on Spotify. You can sign up through there, and you can get the exact same shows in podcast form. You don't get video, but you do get the podcast. Right, that's enough from me for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Let's hope Liverpool can indeed get 3 points down at Bournemouth, and we'll be back next week with another edition of Redmen Weekly. See you later.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.